Then, using refugees as pawns, I have had opportunities of talking to representatives of the Arab states within the last few years. And by the way, I think the Zionist organization and the Israel government are rather living in a glass house about this question of using refugees as pawns, because I think some pretty telling comparisons could be made between their use of Jewish refugees as pawns and the Arab government's use of Arab refugees as pawns. I think both things are detestable things to do to people in the distress that refugees are in, and I think both Israelis and Zionists and the Arab states have been guilty of this rather disgusting thing to do. When I've talked, as I've had opportunities of talking with the Arab states, I have pointed out the policy of the West German government since the war. As you can see, I'm not partial to Germans particularly, certainly not partial to Nazis. No reason to be particularly friendly to Germans. But I have pointed out that the West German government since the war has been more wise as well as more humane. It's more important to be humane than to be wise than the governments of the Arab states since 1948. The West German government had, I suppose, received, what the numbers run to, 6 million, 8 million, something?
9
million, is it, refugees from, partly from Eastern Germany, partly from those territories that were part of Germany before the Second World War, which are now parts of Poland and the Soviet Union. The West German government, as far as I know, has not relinquished its claim to 1 inch of territories that were German east of the present boundary of Western Germany, to German before the Second World War. I'm not going to the question as to whether the Germans' claims to recover those territories are good or bad. That doesn't really concern us here. But my point is that the West Germans have separated, and this I think they were thoroughly right, the question of claims to territory which refugees come from and what to do about the refugees meanwhile. And Western Germany, to her credit, of her heart and her head, has taken the humane and sensible line of absorbing the refugees without renouncing claims to these refugees' homes and territory into her life and into her industry. And one of the reasons why Western Germany is prosperous and powerful now is that she has given these refugees a chance of work, and that means a chance of happiness and prosperity. And her voice is powerful among the nations now because of that. And I've said to the Arab states, why don't you do that? You don't have to relinquish the claim of the Palestinian Arabs to Palestine by absorbing them at present into your industry. You'll be in a stronger position to press your claim later. I'm sorry that they don't take this line, which I think it's silly of them politically, but I'm much more concerned with the humanity side. But I do think, as I said, that Israel is living in a glass house in drawing attention to this particular side of the Arab states policy, because I think that many things can be said, especially about the time immediately after the end of the World War, about Jewish refugees who were directed for political and not humanitarian reasons to Palestine, when they could have had immediate homes and a much better future, I would say, in Australia or in the North American continent. And I think politics were played with the Jewish refugees, just as they're being played now with the Arab refugees. I condemn both.
I just say, Professor, on this question of politics refugees,
yes.
I've seen a lot of criticism of the attitudes of various governments after World War II, that they had no room for our refugees. Now, I believe even you yourself have mentioned it in some context, that they did not open their gates to refugees. But I must, and this I do on basis of personal knowledge, I must reject emphatically any suggestion they were used as political pawns. The fact is that tens of thousands came to other countries, United States, to Canada, across the world. Those who came to Israel came because they sought independence and freedom, and they sought restoration, and they felt that they could only overcome the experience of what had happened to them in the hands of the Nazis in a life of creativity with their own people. But I would say this as far as the comparing the two problems. You do not refer to the fact, sir, that we have taken in 1 million refugees. That these include over 400,000 refugees from Arab countries. There was an exchange of populations here very much like the Turco-Greek exchange after World War I.
Yeah.
We've taken over 400,000 Jewish refugees and we've taken in and absorbed economically over 70,000 Arab refugees. You can't turn Arab refugees.
Yes.
I can show you United Nations documents on that.
Yeah.
You can't turn back the clock of history. You can't try to exterminate a people You can't feed refugees for hatred for year and year after year, and then expect Israel to take them in to destroy us from within. But I would suggest, sir, if I may, in this respect, in view of the very deep humanitarian interest you take in this problem, and I see that from the suggestion you've made to Arab leaders, and I fully understand your motive, at least this form of parasitic existence, this debasement, basic debasement of humanity should cease. And rights is one thing, but also life as it is lived is another. At least that should cease. I would suggest that whenever you're free, if you could come to visit Israel, so that we could show you on the spot, Professor, who we've absorbed, how we've absorbed them, both Jewish refugees and the 70,000 Arab refugees I spoke of. I feel that when you're there, when you have the sense of the area, when you have the sense of region, when you see the area of Israel, what we have done within it, when you see the vast area of the Middle East, and this is part of it, and the endless opportunities to solve the problem of neighboring countries, I would like very much then to hear your judgment, sir. May I suggest that, as time is running short, we go on to the famous fossil thing, sir, because I'm sure the audience, you know this.
It's a piece of comic relief, rather, the fossil thing.
As you have said, Professor, this title fossil has almost entered the international vocabulary since you used it in the context you did. And as I understood from reading your works over the past few days, nights, I should say, there are fossils and there are also peoples in the archaic sense. Yeah. I said earlier, we seem to be in both. We're both a fossil with the Parsis in India, and when it comes to archaism, we have a link with the Norwegians, the Greeks, the Turks, and the Irish. Well, I would say this, at least in the archaic angle, I've got associations from childhood.
Yeah.
As far as the Parsis, I'm afraid, I have no acquaintance.
They're very interesting people.
Professor, may I say this?
Yes.
I'm not a historian.
Yeah.
Your thesis has been challenged by historians of great eminence and writers.
Yeah.
There's quite a vocabulary of reply to, they call it in various terms, a Tonaby thesis, a Tonaby heresy.
Don't I know it? Yes.
And I understand you're going to write...
Aubrey Eben, is it Tonaby heresy, isn't it?
Yes, Eben, Eben, the heresy.
Yeah.
There's also the professor and the fossil.
Yes.
And
there's another one, yes, with two books of the kind,
yes, and there's also Judaism, fossil, or faith, something like that.
Yeah.
I would only ask you, I'm a diplomat representing my country, and my experience in this field is contemporary times. I've not studied deeply history as you have. But I would ask you, in all objectivity as historian, sir, if I may, our concept of our life down the ages, I can sum it up in a verse from Psalms. It is, Lo amut ki echye va'asaper ma'aseka. I shall not die, but I shall live. A fossil doesn't die, but he also doesn't live.
Yeah.
Here we part ways. And as we live, and through our survival down the ages, we see the hand of providence, we have the sense of survival under providence, and we move ahead as we've prayed to spiritual fulfillment. Here lies the basic difference between us. You say to us, you did not die, why is not clear, but you did not live. No continuity in terms of creative life and thought. You've sort of slipped out of the stream of civilization. Some remote island got stuck there. Now and then your voice is heard as it shrieks of the passing ships. We say, no, we have been in the stream. We have been in the stream in a distinctive sense. In our survival, in our prayer, in our hope, in our attachment to our land, and in our belief in the fulfillment of immortal prophecy. But that is at issue, and I am not a historian. As I say, others are debating that with you. But I would ask you, as a modern Israeli, one representing my country, and one who has seen the country come to life and independence, from the academic historical analysis point of view, as you scan the canvas of history, Professor, is there no significance in the following facts which cannot be denied? Number one, Of the ancient peoples of the Middle East, we are the only one living in continuity today in the Middle East, speaking the same language, practicing the same religious faith.
Which of the Parsis?
Well, I'm talking of the Middle East.
Yeah.
Rabbi Jochanan ben Zakkai, to whom you devote much attention.
Yeah.
He and Rabbi Akiva and Bar Kokhba, they came to life. They could live with us. They would not find a dichotomy which snapped them asunder. There's a continuity of experience. I'm just raising this for your attention, sir. Yeah. Secondly, that after this passage through the valley of death down the ages, and you yourself have described in your book, you caucus the ashes of diaspora, as we've come to life in our time, we've come to life without rancor. Despite all that has passed between us and our Arab neighbors, I can assure you, and you will see this if you come to Israel, there is no rancor, there's no hatred. There's grief, but there's a hope for peace every day. And there's a confidence that will come. Nor is there rancor to nations across the world and systems and doctrines whom we have met and had a dialogue, at times a very serious one and accompanied with tragedy for us down the ages. This very vitality of life and survival without rancor, this too, I would submit, has a certain significance in terms of historical analysis. Thirdly, after these thousands of years, we've assembled our people from 70 lands. The Yemenites from the remote deserts of Yemen, who were cut off for over 2,000 years from the stream of civilization, with the cave dwellers of Morocco, Jews from East, West Europe, Nazi death camps, the remote hinterland of India. They've all come together and they found a common nationhood spontaneously. Has that link got no vitality? Was that a fossil? Is that how a fossil reacts? All these particles of the fossil come together and they feel one. Finally, the question of democracy. After all this experience, we are the only viable democracy in terms of the Israel-Arab complex in the area. And finally, the fact is that today, many new nations from Africa and Asia turn to us for guidance, for cooperation. And they find in our experiment, in our enterprise, they find something which draws them as a link. So we do have a message for the world, and not, sir, as you've suggested, that our message ceased sometime 2,300 years ago. May I just finish by saying what I'm trying to say has been expressed very vividly by Professor Lewis Mumford in his Conduct of Life. He says, the binding force of an ethical force based on purpose has been dramatically confirmed in the history of the Jew. Its practical consummation in our time perhaps merits our special note. We believe that our survival is an index of the supremacy of spiritual over material value. We believe in all humility and thanks to a grateful providence that it has a relevance to the broad experience of mankind today. I would ask you, sir, in all respect, whether you don't think all these elements have any basis on which you could possibly reconsider your concept of us as a fossil, non-creative, which suddenly fell out, neither died nor lived for the past 2,300 years.
It's rather a curious point about this word fossil, that I've never used it of Jewish people alone. I've always used it of a whole class of peoples. It's a rather an academic point, really, and sorry to inflict my theories of history on you. I've tried to map out a kind of picture of civilizations, and I found that there were several generations or series of civilizations, some of which died out perhaps several thousand years ago, others are alive today. But I did find that of the civilizations that died out quite a long time ago, certain exceptional communities, the Jews, the Parsis, one branch of the Buddhists, a certain rather obscure Christian sects, the Monophysites and Nestorians, I don't know if you know about them, anyway, were surviving representatives of a civilization whose other members had become extinct, in the sense not that human beings, they were become extinct, but they had become absorbed into other civilizations, races, peoples, and so on, of whom the Ten Tribes of Israel, the classical example. There are many others, of course. What I wanted to express in the word fossil was that these exceptional communities had survived from a previous age, just as fossils are a surviving record of forms of life that existed in a preceding age, and that they have survived by encasing themselves in for many centuries on end. And I think this does apply to the Jewish community as well as to the Parsi one and to some of these Christian diasporas as well, by encasing themselves in a very rigid religious organization, particularly in the keeping of a very minute system of law, which isn't merely religious law, which is also social manners and customs as well. Those were the two conceptions that I wanted to convey in the word fossil. Now, none of the other people whom I labelled as fossils has ever complained. I thought this pointing out that these people had this great survival power was rather complimentary, and the only complaints I've had have been from Jews, and they've complained as if I had stuck the Jews with this label alone and not the other people. I don't know why this is, particularly. I think a fossil is... all our labels are more or less imperfect. It's quite true. It doesn't convey the idea that communities surviving from a previous civilization are, after all, still alive, because human beings, when they're surviving, are alive, and they do things. Ambassador is quite right about this. I've got a longish section about this word fossil in a forthcoming volume of Reconsiderations, or Second Thoughts, that I'm publishing, which is a great deal about Jewish history, especially coming out on the 4th of May. Sorry to advertise my own works. I said, could we take some word for a living creature? Just when I was thinking about this, off South Africa, they found an antediluvian fish called the coelacanthus. Could I substitute the word coelacanthus for fossil? Would that be any more attractive to the people I'd labelled fossil? I thought probably it wouldn't, and after all, the coelacanthus is a very archaic form of life, and the ambassador tried to write to present-day Jews are by no means archaic. They're in the full stream of life. But isn't it true that from the time of the Roman Wars, really, in the time of Philo of Alexandria, or in the time when the Christian Acts of the Apostles were written, you see the position of the Jewish communities in the Greco-Roman world, they were, as they are today in the Western world, they were living very much in the stream, as the ambassador says, of the common life of that civilization. Under the shock of the Roman Wars, I do think that the Jewish communities withdrew into a kind of shell. They gave up writing and speaking Greek and went back to Hebrew, or rather Aramaic, perhaps. And for many centuries they remained encased, partly by their own will, partly by the bad treatment they received from Christians, especially Western Christians, I think. And it's only since the Napoleonic time, almost, you might say, except in some very early enlightened countries like Holland and Tuscany, which began doing this in the 16th and 17th centuries, that the doors were opened to the Jews and they were brought back into the full stream of life. The tragic point about this, again, is that I think on both the Jewish side as well as on the Gentile side, there have been certain reservations about forming a single community. I suppose Jews feel that the Gentiles haven't really entirely received them into the Gentile community, and Gentiles feel that the Jews have not entirely come into the Gentile community. But compared to the situation before, say, about 1800, the Jews in present times have, of course, become part of the general stream of life and have played this enormous part in it.
Defossilized, sir?
Yes, you can defossilize, just as you can defrost a car. And,
well, that's very interesting.
Yes. I've never denied this, and I haven't found another word to express what I mean. This is a particular category of communities, and from the, so to speak, scientific or sociological point of view, it does need a name. Find me a better name and I'll use it. That's all I can say, really.
Well, Professor, if I may just...
It's not meant as an insult or a jibe.
I understand
or,
with the main point.
But it applies to many other people besides the Jews.
Yeah, well, I just say this, as far as the peoples, as far as I've read, and the category of fossils...
Yeah.
I do think, without wishing in any way to offend the Parsis in India, I do think that the Jewish civilization, in terms of its dialogue and impact on world civilization down the ages, in terms of its creativity, and by the way, sir, you will pardon me if I observe that in your work you do not mention any creative Jewish activity since about 2300, actually since Rabbi Yochanan and Zakkai later.
Yeah.
Not mentioned the academies of learning in Palestine, in Jerusalem, in Safed, learning, yeah. mysticism, Mishnah, Talmud, yeah. Jerusalem yeah. Talmud, Babylonian Talmud, yeah. Targum, Masorah, yes. the poetry, the first Paitanim who laid the yeah. basis for modern Jewish Hebrew poetry, and right down the ages, and then yeah. Hasidism,
yes.
and the whole movements of a living body yeah. of people, they're not mentioned. And then the interaction of this influence in terms of relationship with the nations of the world, and after all, you yourself admit that Christianity and Islam have had something from the fount of Judaism. So I think the comparison with the Parsis, but I don't want to offend the Parsis, I don't know very much about them. But what I would say is this, that this creativity, and I take it right down modern times, what I'm very happy about is that you agree today that the fossil has become defossilized. Now the problem is not so much now finding alternative term for the fossil since it became a fossil till now, but finding a term for the new creature which is being defossilized.
Remember I said with reservations, I'm afraid the reservations on the Jewish side and on the Gentile side, and these are serious, and we have to remember them.
But Professor, what yes. about the points I raised earlier? Yes. I think, do you accept that these considerations of vitality I mentioned earlier, related to Israel's return and restoration, have they anything to do with the defossilization? Are they signs for you, historically speaking, of a vitality?
I think, of course, that the Gentile Westerners invented nationalism, which I strongly dislike, and that the Jews caught this disease from the Western Gentiles, which is very unfortunate.
Well, it's been a long, long, long disease with us. And and many, many, yeah. many physicians have tried yeah. to cure us down the ages.
Yeah.
Yeah. But we refuse to be yeah. cured.
Yes.
The point, Professor, what yeah. I mean is, I'm not talking now, I know that you're opposed to the modern state. You,
yes.
you want a
yes.
world state.
Yes.
Well, I mean, there are many people, also in Israel, who think that
yes.
we must move to much more
yes.
world cooperation
yes.
without giving up on its independence. It's a different matter.
Yes, agreed.
But what I'm saying is, the attributes which have been shown now by the people in Israel, now not talking of the state in the formal sense,
no.
the attribute of survival, of vitality, of democracy, of lack of rancor, of sense of peace, of cooperation, of this growing pattern with new nations of the world, after 2,000 years of exile, do you think historically this has some significance?
But I've never denied that the Jews have always been alive, and I've never denied that I've criticized some forms of vitality of Israel has taken, but I've never denied the vitality. May I, on this other question of the comparison of the Jewish community through the ages with others, nearly all of us in this room are Westerners, either Jews or Christians, and we have the natural Western egocentrism, and therefore, because the Jews are mainly in the West, and because Christianity is derived from Judaism, the Jews loom large. If you went to Southern and Eastern Asia, the perspective changes, and the Parsis, who have also been defossilized just about contemporarily with the Jews as a result of the modernization of India, will play an important part in history, which may surprise you, because India is going to play an important part, and they are to India what the Jews are to the Western world.
I have no objection at all, sir.
No.
Don't mind
being compared with them.
Well, I would say this, that I have, as an amateur historian,
yeah.
some concept of approach, and
yeah.
I think that analogy can be very, very sensitive and very complex business, but I say let historians debate that with you.
Yeah.
If I may say in conclusion, just on this point, I do hope, sir, before you pass another judgment, before your new book comes out, if possible, that you would visit Israel and weigh up the process
yeah.
of defossilization in your context yeah. and see this vitality and compare
yeah.
it in a historic span. And then let us have your conclusions. I hope
yes.
you will be able to come, and I'm sure our people are very happy to show you the country and
yeah.
to answer any questions. And
yeah.
we've no objection at all if
yeah.
you visit neighboring countries
yeah.
and have a broad Middle Eastern view of the situation.
Thank you, because vitality is not enough. Morality, let's come back to that. Morality,
well,
vitality is grand.
On the morality
yes.
issue,
yes.
you
yes.
yourself have agreed that we are like other peoples. That, again, can be looked into when you visit Israel.
Yes.
Thank
you very much, Mr. Rendell.